My name is Patrick Kwiatkowski. I'm the founder and CEO of Micro Cinema International. We are a home video distributor focusing on cultural and artistic DVDs. I'd like to introduce our panelists this afternoon. Brent Hoff, who's the executive producer of Wolfen DVD, a specialty DVD label out of San Francisco. And just next to Brent is Liz Ogilvie, who's the head of programming for Docurama, which is a division of New Video, a specialty distributor of socially, culturally...
Award-winning documentaries, critically acclaimed, but mainly documentaries is what we do for Docurama Films.
And next to me is Scott Schumann, who's the VP of Acquisitions and Production for Sony Pictures Worldwide Acquisition. So welcome. Thanks for being here. Thank you for coming. Could I get a show of hands of how many filmmakers are in the audience? Awesome. Any labels or producers?
Spies.
Plants? Yeah. Anybody from streaming media companies that are trying to dislodge us? No. There you go. Awesome. Back in the 1980s, as you well know, when VHS won the last format war, it really transformed the entertainment industry. It created home video. And DVDs even one-upped the VHS in the early 90s. Now, DVDs, by some accounts, by some analysts' numbers, account for over 50% of the entertainment revenue share, which is a lot. And even a bigger chunk of that, 60%, accounts for the profits of the major studios. For companies like mine, it's 100%. And so DVDs remain a very important part of our industry, and they remain a very important part for you. So today, we have a pretty diverse group up here. We have a major studio. I'm a minor studio, a well-respected indie label, and Docurama is part of what I would call a mini-major. New Video distributes A&E and some other large...
Yeah, we do the home video for A&E, the History Channel, Major League Baseball, soccer, Scholastic, and then I run the label Docurama Films, which deals specifically with documentary films.
So we all have a pretty important stake in DVD. And so what we'd like to share with you today is some of our thoughts and hopes and fears. And so I'd like to kick off with a few questions of my own for the panelists. And then pretty quickly, I'd like to open it up to the floor to get your questions from our panelists. So I guess I'd like to, let's address it to Sony first. You know, why is DVD relevant to what you do?
DVD has become more and more relevant over the years as theatrical has, I don't want to say it's first weekend and you're out, but theatrical has, there's more movies out there. It's you don't really make a profit theatrically on a movie unless it's a huge success and it's a very contained P&A spend. P&A is your print and advertising. But on most movies, when you say the profit's DVD, it's because, you know, you're spending $80 million to make a movie, $50 million to release it. So say that movie makes $80 million at the box office, it's going to be in the window of DVD that you're seeing most of those profits. So with, I guess, the shortening of the rental window when VHS went the way of the duckbill platypus, it's become more important that DVD drive a title after the theatrical window. It's the sales of DVDs. It's still rental window, but you need to get the revenue that you spend on releasing something and getting it out there. A lot of people say that your theatrical campaign is just a big advertising campaign for your DVD at this point.
Liz?
You know, I can definitely speak to that. We actually did the theatrical release of a film that was actually South by Southwest here last year, Air Guitar Nation. And we ended up, it was kind of our first foray into the theatrical world, but we figured, you know, we're a home video company, so why would we venture into the theatrical business when everybody's saying that the theatrical model's pretty much broken? But the nature of kind of what we're doing at Docorama Films is the titles that we acquire are titles that we look at that we know that there's a built-in audience. We know there's a constituency of people out there who it really behooves them to learn about the film. They're interested in the subject matter. And we figured air guitar, it's kind of fun. You know, there's a, and also we tapped into the whole air guitar national championships that were going on at that time. So we sort of kicked off with a really strategic theatrical release where we went into 25 cities where we knew that the air guitar championships were going to then follow along with the theatrical. So it was in sort of everybody's psyche. And although the our box office did not perform very well, the sales skyrocketed with the DVD because we actually ended up having a marketing and PR campaign that lasted for 10 months, which would be significantly longer than if we had just done a traditional home video release. So I think certainly from our point of view, we're being a lot more strategic at what the titles we're sort of looking at, especially for DVD and especially for documentaries.
Yeah, and we're coming, Walfin comes at it, we're mostly a subscriber-based DVD quarterly-ish magazine. We put these out as quarterly-ish as possible. And we, which is to say, we're improving our timelines. But we, when we were first thinking of putting out, we had found a bunch of films that were not getting any sort of distribution whatsoever. And we thought of how best to distribute them. DVD was obviously at that point 2 years ago was the only choice. And it still is, it still remains right now. And I think for the next 3 or 4 years, at least, the best choice for getting a lot of independent films out into the hands of people. We view it very similar to the music business in a way. We produce our CDs and then we take them on the road and we show them to people and we sell them from our websites and it's a different sort of model than the traditional film industry model that we follow, but it works very well and our profit margins are much higher than they would be in another way. So it's actually something that you can, is a viable business.
On the profit side, I'll toss out some numbers, and this is why this panel is here today, everybody. If you follow the industry, you know, people are scared and the DVD's dying. Well, in 2007, domestic DVD sales were about $16 billion. And that was about a 3.5% drop from 2006. And that's projected to decline. You know, that's the kind of trajectory that we're looking at. So the big studios are nervous. That's a lot of money. You know, Sony actually can feel a 3.5% drop in sales. And why is this happening? Well, you know, there's some competition out there. There is the internet. And it's there and it's not going away. And so all of us here have to deal with that. But, you know, we also have eaten our own young. DVDs have dropped in price. They're aggressively marketed. They're sold to places like Walmart. They're sold to Target. Target uses DVDs as a loss leader. So it's a problem. So my question to the panel is, what are you doing now to save your DVD business? Or what are you doing to perhaps counter the effect of the internet? Or are you going to embrace the internet?
I think I sort of mentioned it earlier a little bit more. We are really being a lot more strategic about the films that we are, the documentary films that we're acquiring. And the whole concept of, you know, a couple of years ago where docs are hot, you know, I think you have a small few filmmakers who've done, you know, millions at the box office, but there are many, many more fantastic documentaries that are out there where you have filmmakers who are absolutely tapped in and filmmakers are getting a lot more savvy about their audiences. And they really have themselves become excellent marketers. And we've sort of tapped into that. And what we're finding is, for example, the titles that we've been sort of acquiring in the past, we're now looking at more social issue documentaries. We're still looking to acquire classic documentaries that are more seminal classics that have never had an audience before. And we're using the internet more so in blogging, marketing. We're doing a huge viral campaign. We're using companies to help us, you know, really get the word out. We're being a lot more aggressive about that. And in the long run, you know, our DVD sales have actually increased. And in fact, because we're so niche, I really feel because there's an audience out there that it absolutely behooves them to get their hands on this kind of product, that we're not seeing sales downing at all. I mean, that's one of the things, because we are, you know, realizing what's going to happen over the next few years.
Yeah, and we're not either. When people talk about this DVD flattening and softening and all this sort of stuff because of the internet, I think it's actually, for the level that we are at, and probably the level that most of the people in this room are at, you know, South by Southwest attendees, film festival, it's exactly the opposite. What the internet is doing is providing a lot of opportunity to make people aware of your DVD that they can purchase. And believe me, people do want to purchase a physical object, especially if it's well made and if some time is put into it. And we're finding that the exact opposite of all of these like fears. You know, there's such a simplistic notion of you know, the blinders on. It's either DVD or it's video on demand, but once both cannot coexist. And it's something about the mindset, but it is absolutely silly. Both are tools that you can use to get your film seen. And the nice thing about DVD is you can make them and sell them off your own website. You can have a great degree of control of the distribution of them. You can
make various and I think for us, it is down, and it's hurt a lot for at least our business. There's a lot of competition for eyes, and the way I look at it, it's the maturation of your collection. I mean, when DVD first came out, I was buying stuff I had on VHS. I was like, oh, I have The Godfather on VHS, but I also need it on DVD, and then I also need all these other things in the new format because it's much better. That's changed a lot for me personally. Now, where I used to buy 30 DVDs a year when DVD first came out, probably buy two or three. And I think if you look at your own personal collection, I talk to my friends and they're like, yeah, I don't really buy DVDs anymore. I buy, you know, my favorite TV shows, or I buy, you know, a certain specialty thing that may interest them. excuse me, as a hobby or something like that. So I think while we discussed this prior to the panel, just between us, I think there's a lot of opportunity for niche DVDs and the right type of product gotten out to the right consumer in a proper, efficient way. I think there's a market for that. For our needs, where we used to pretty much own a large space of the direct-to-DVD business, and the theatrical films on DVD, they are hurting. The shelf space at a Walmart, where you do 50% of your sales, is getting tougher to hold on to. They, you know, they want to commit floor space to the stuff that's selling. And if a DVD is not selling, you're going to lose that floor space. So you have to essentially find ways to make the product exciting. And I think that's what you're seeing with the new format. Now that there is a definitive format, we'll see whether the consumer takes to that. I think it's a very similar format. It's not the jump from VHS to DVD that we had initially, and it's not going to really change any windows the way that did. But the business is down. It's down internationally for various reasons. Piracy and rental has struggled. There's a lot of problems in the DVD market, and I say problems just meaning as a studio, I'm saying we're, you know, not doing the numbers that we were doing. The growth is not there anymore. It's on the decline.
For Micro Cinema, we keep growing. We keep finding artists and directors who want to publish their work. And as Brent said, the internet's very exciting. I mean, it keeps me sleepless at night sometimes, but trying to figure out what to do. But it's helping us. And you really can't remove the DVD from what's called distribution. The distribution world is changing as well, and I think, you know, you probably see that at New Video.
I mean, certainly. One of the things too, if you realize that when you go into an agreement with a home video distributor, you know, you're going into contract for maybe like 7 years. So we have your film for 7 years on DVD. So it really sort of what we do is like our catalog is like maybe 200 films. So that's a lot of filmmakers and a lot of films that we have to deal with. But I find that the filmmakers who are really know their subject matter and kind of know what information is sort of happening, if there's something, for example, there's a film Farmingville that we worked with Carlos Carlos Sandoval and Catherine Sambini. It was a film that was at Sundance a few years ago, and it deals with immigration. It was the first film that really dealt with the subject. Carlos is so involved with this subject matter, and he's on the news all the time talking about immigration. And so he just gives us the heads up, you know, hey, I'm on the news again. And so therefore we do a little sort of, you know, flurry of activity around it. And the DVD sales, you know, continue to maintain sort of, you know, levels. We're continually selling. But there's other titles that, you know, we don't have that much success with, but we're constantly looking for new ways of really, you know, getting a new audience to titles. And another way of doing that is obviously the sort of digital realm. And New Video is actually one of the few aggregators that are working with iTunes right now. And we did actually release the Purple Violets film with Ed Burns. So we've had, and we've been working with them for quite some time through A&E and the History Channel. And for Docurama Films, it's kind of a new initiative. And we're slowly but surely getting films up there. And I think it's going to be really interesting. And I think it's another piece of revenue that filmmakers can look at that will certainly garner some, you know, some money over a few years.
Definitely. Anybody, I'd like to open up the floor to some questions, and I'll continue to ask the panelists questions as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The question, it was actually more of a sort of case study with a film Faster that we did. Slightly off the normal subject matter of documentaries that we do. It was a film really about MotoGP racers, and it was narrated by Ewan McGregor. But what happened was the filmmaker, Martin Neal, he had been, again, it's like that model where he really did a lot of self-distribution himself with his own DVD, and he tapped into, there's a lot of distributors that deal with MotoGP product, and there's vying away from the alternative home video distributors, he tapped into this whole other realm of bike equipment and all that kind of stuff. So what we did was we arranged with Mark, you know, absolutely you can go ahead and do that because it doesn't cannibalize the marketplace, it doesn't cannibalize our sales. But what he did was he, through doing this, ended up building awareness of the film that we just didn't have the resources to do. So by doing that, and actually the parallel between what the marketing he was doing and kind of what we were doing actually worked extremely well. And as a result, he had his own sort of little self-distribution business going on. He was able to sell from the web, and then we continued to do the whole sort of retail model. And it worked perfectly. And I think that was kind of an unusual situation, just purely and simply because of the other distributors that he was actually going to. And that's something that you can definitely impact, was one of them. And that's you can certainly look into that. But that was a perfect marriage in that relationship. Yeah, we actually did Faster, and we did sort of Faster 2, which was the Doctor, the Tornado, and the Kentucky Kid. And we're actually going to be working on another one with him. And it's a great relationship.
Why is a theatrical the golden ticket? Why is theatrical release the golden ticket for you?
For me? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm saying that it is a golden ticket. Like, I'm kind of realistic that there's a slim chance that that's going to happen. So why not play the odds with talking to the DVD or to the internet?
Well, I can speak to that a little bit. Yeah, I mean, when DVD was starting off, we could buy anything, put it, dress it up. We have a great marketing team. It's the same marketing team that's working on our big studio releases. It's doing the boxes for the DVDs. We could dress anything up, make it look like a decent movie. And then over time, it would sell. We get into the dump bins at Walmart and just keeps turning. We do a lot of units. And back when DVDs first started up, people were buying a lot of the stuff. Recently, it's tougher to get in the bin space. The bins are now old theatrical movies. People are going to buy Groundhog Day, not some movie with no cast that they can't really, you know, they don't remember seeing it. So when the direct-to-video space was starting off, you could throw anything out there, and it was turning. Horror was hot, so the horror movies were everywhere, and we were putting all these horror movies out on DVD. The horror film has kind of run its cycle. It's a very cyclical genre, and traditionally horror films over-indexed on DVD, not so much anymore. But I think right now as a studio, we're being very selective. While we used to just take a high concept movie with no cast and we could make a sell on a DVD box, those days are over. Now it's about cast, it's about genre, it's, you know, action, thriller, still a little horror, but we don't really look for that anymore. But cast is still your brand. You need something in that space when you're competing against the noise of these boxes with holograms on it. Someone's going to say, I recognize that person, pick that off the shelf. And it's just tougher for us as a studio. We need to justify releasing something to put it through the pipeline. We need to know we're going to do a certain amount of units to just, you know, use that slot. Because there's a lot of movies out there. Every festival, you know, we go to Sundance, even here, there's, you know, probably 50 available movies here. Only a certain few are going to get distribution from, you know, there's different tiers. And there's a lot of opportunity for the right company to, you know, who's situated the right way to make a lot of money on some of these movies. And it's great for the filmmakers. But for our needs, you know, I need a certain level of cast in something, or else it's just not worth it putting through our pipeline the overhead of releasing something. Whereas we used to just turn these huge profits on these films, it's not there anymore. We're starting to lose money. And as a studio, we just don't take on movies to lose money. Every film is just, you know, we're taking it on to make money for both us and the filmmaker.
That's a good strategy.
That's right.
To lose money.
To help make money for the filmmaker. I mean, you have to you have to do your homework. I mean, there are a lot of companies like mine, for example. If you've made any film that has to deal with art and culture, you should call me, maybe not Sony. And so we're constantly picking up new films and films that have already been distributed before, by the way. Absolutely. We if we can find a market to sell a film, we're going to sell it. I don't care if it's been out for 8 years. Because we're going to do a better job at selling it because we know our market. And you have to find the distribution companies that know how to do this. And again, you should start your activities. I mean, if you're not getting any traction, start doing it yourself. And then yeah, absolutely.
We get a lot of feature filmmakers sending us films to do excerpts because we primarily do short films. So we do some longer films, but mostly short films. And we get filmmakers in your position sending us their film to do an extended excerpt or something. David O. Russell did it with a film he made. He made a documentary after he made Three Kings. He found out that there was a real story about guys actually finding $300 million and trying to steal it in Iraq. And he went and made a documentary for it. And he had his separate distribution on his own label. And then he did a condensed version for us to put out just as a way to drive sales of his own DVD. I think there's a lot of room somewhere between, you know, a Sony, a major, you know, like the new Ratatouille release and you in the back of your van trying to sell it yourself. There's a lot of room. And I see a lot of films. I see a lot of films here. I've seen them at, you know, True False last weekend that are amazing films that could very easily make the filmmaker back the money that he put into the film at the very least. You can just find a viable distribution, DVD distribution model for it and finding people. And we, you know, Liz does it and everyone, and Patrick does it and I do it. And we still don't do enough. There's still room. I think there's a little hole and an opportunity. Someone can start that business out there.
Well, you know, we distribute DVDs to places like art museums. That's what they buy. They don't buy a streaming video. Okay. So there's a market, but we work with filmmakers who still self-distribute, and we distribute. We sometimes don't ask for exclusivity. If we get, we have a documentary that's an atheist documentary called The God Who Wasn't There. It's amazing. This guy sells tons of it off his website, and yet he still uses us as a distributor because we get it into places where he can't, and he has a major atheist network that, you know, we don't know these people. So, not that I'm religious, but you know, it's just not my thing. So, you could conceivably be working with many distributors if you can pull it off. And I think more and more distributors like us, we're not asking for the world. If we can make money and get your stuff somewhere, we'll do it. So think about that. Yes, sir.
Especially mine, right?
Yeah. Well, actually,
it's great. Go out and buy a player today. I mean, Blu-ray, as an owner of a Blu-ray machine, I'll tell you for a second, it really is to a point where it looks crisper than a film. When you go and see a film in your home now, you can see something that looks superb to the point where it's almost too good. I think right now a lot of DPs need to learn how to shoot for Blu-ray because the quality is so precise that you can see stuff that you didn't used to be able to see. The makeup team needs to be on their game. It's a different way to light. I mean, I was watching, I think, Stranger Than Fiction on Blu-ray, and you could see the water spots on the window behind them, and it just wasn't intentional. It was just there, and it's that crisp that Blu-ray is not for every movie. I think ultimately, it's a great format, but I think right now, when we look at our catalog, we see certain movies just weren't shot to the point where they're going to look as good as Blu-ray does. So for a lot of the movies going forward, I think people are a little more conscious that it's a format that they have to be more accommodating of and maybe be a little more precise in some of the smaller details. But I think it's important now to see what happens now that there is a format. To see where that goes. I mean, it's definitely, I think, tailored for the home theater, and there's a certain type of movie that works stronger in the home theater for our needs. And I think it's just a matter of whether the consumer takes to it, because there really is a difference. It's the first time you see it, you're kind of like, you know, even with some other stuff. But I think you see the difference right now. And to me, there is a difference. I'm a cinephile. I watch a lot of movies at home, and to me, the quality difference is important, and I'm happy about it. I'm ready for, you know, a lot of good movies that we can put out in this new format, and I hope it takes.
And you should also add, though, that since most of you, many of you in the audience are filmmakers, as, you know, a distributor, I still get, you know, maybe each issue that comes out, I'll get about 5 or 10 emails from people who still can't play double layer discs on their DVD players. Like I completely agree. I think Blu-ray is amazing and it looks amazing, and I would love to produce Walfins in Blu-ray and give people the option of that. But as you're going through the production process and trying to figure out what to do, just be aware that you know, having the option and shooting it in HD. I hope this isn't shot in HD because my makeup is down. But your audience is probably not going to have a Blu-ray player in the next 6 months to watch it on.
We could be excited about it because it's art. It's great for art. There is a problem with it, however. We talked about this earlier, so I won't pick on you too much, but especially since you're in acquisitions. It's extraordinarily expensive to manufacture. An average DVD, you know, you can work with someone like us and make a couple thousand DVDs for under $1. That's printed, packaged, and shrink-wrapped. DVD, a Blu-ray right now, which is a proprietary technology, which is Sony and a consortium, charges almost $2,000 license fee just to replicate. That's a lot of money. And that's a problem. And I'm trying to get you guys to get rid of it, but they said no the other day. And there's another fee per disc. So a company like mine, I'm not going to do Blu-ray until the costs come down. And that's bad for Blu-ray because the major studios are not going to be able to get that format into the mainstream until they get their business sense screwed on.
Well, I think right now their concern and what they want to get out is the summer blockbusters, and they feel like that's going to drive the format. So
it will, but yeah. Disc Makers is a big company. They'll start pumping out Blu-ray. I've got artists calling me from all over the world. Oh man, I got to get my cool art on Blu-ray. Well, I'm like, okay, you know, we got to charge people $50 for it. So I'm confident that Sony and the majors will get rid of those fees. And in the meantime, we'll keep, you know, we'll keep bugging you. Yes, back in the show.
To the genre of shorts, yeah. There's a this was a big it was a big experiment at first, because there is sort of a belief amongst a lot of people in Hollywood that short films are basically just calling cards for people who want to make features. But that's actually not the case at all. There are a lot of people, you know, not every idea is an hour 10. There are other ideas and stories that actually should be told in different time lengths, you know? And this is a crazy idea to a lot of people. But so we have found that there's a huge interest in films, of differently length films. And, you know, if it's a good story and, you know, I mean, Steven Soderbergh, for our second issue, made a film specifically for us because he had an idea and it was going to be a certain length and he wanted to make this film. So he made one for us. And we find that there, what we're basically, it is hard in terms of compilations. You know, what we're basically selling is a brand. If you're doing a short film compilation, you really have to, people have to trust you. I don't know that I would buy a short film compilation. I have a bunch of stuff I don't know. You know, maybe there's some famous actors involved in some of them. Maybe they've won some awards. But even so, you really have to kind of trust what you're getting. So what we try and do is just establish that as a brand. But we have found that, you know, especially in terms of the economics of it, we make some of the short films on the issues, and just know from some of the short films that we've actually made, we end up making more money than feature length documentaries that, you know, people spent 7 years in Africa filming in Uganda and under harsh conditions, like these amazingly million-dollar films. You, when it comes time to get distribution for those films, people are offering, you know, a feature-length doc, not a lot of money for distribution. And being a short film and being able to do stuff online and being able to do different, you know, I have a film on here. It's a illegal volleyball game. We went down to the U.S.-Mexico border and played the world's most illegal game of volleyball using the wall as a net. I've put it out on Wolfen 3. I also licensed it to another DVD distributor, Ironweed. They have it on their DVD. Mm-hmm. Sold it to a network that's going to be using it. That's going to be on an Italian TV show. Like, each one of those are little revenue streams that are coming in to me for, you know, a film that cost the price of a volleyball to make. I've made more, and I know the numbers because I know what some feature docs are selling for, and I've made more money off of that film than a lot of these feature directors have. So it is a viable market, and we can give me your film afterwards. We'll talk.
Yes, please.
Talk later.
I mean, for our business model, it's looking like just the way we're set up at our overhead. Fewer premier titles are better. Not to say there's not a company out there that's very profitable that has their niche. But I think it's, you know, they're good at what they do because of the way they're set up. They have a few people that know the right places to sell it to, and they know, you know, how to market these films, and that's fantastic. If there's a company that's making a lot of money and it's going to benefit us, we're going to look at them. But for the most part, our guys are concerned about selling Walmart, and they're concerned about selling Target and Best Buy, and that's the focus. You're talking about a different type of, like, separate acquisition of a profitable company. Of course, we're always going to look at that. But I think they're good because of the way they're set up, because they got the right people who are passionate about these films, who have the right connections, and are working on a smaller scale. And that's what these specialty films need. And you take that away, you take away, you know, the people who are doing this and the people who are calling up the museums and saying, you know, you want 100 copies, you want 100 copies, you know, then, it's not really sensible. It's not where we are and what our direction is.
I can guarantee that Walmart has never taken in a Dotcorama Films title, but certainly looking at sort of the retailers and the space that's sort of out there for films, it's definitely getting smaller. And one of the things that we actually created a couple of years ago, knowing the nature of the content of our films, was something called the affiliate program that actually Amazon does, but we created our own and we developed our own software where documentary filmmakers know their audience. They have a fan base of people who are really interested. There's usually organizations or foundations that lend themselves to the theme or the subject matter. So what we did is working very closely with our filmmakers who obviously have worked perhaps with these foundations or with groups of people who, for example, with Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, we worked with the filmmakers had built this whole grassroots level with the UN and sort of other organizations dealing with refugees. So we tapped into those organizations and they joined as an affiliate. And what they were doing is they would send newsletters to their membership. They would, depending on how involved they would want to be, and then by driving their constituency of members to our website, they would then get a 10% kickback to their 501c3. So it's like an incentive program. So this is something that we developed because we realized there's a whole community of people out there who really should get their hands on this fantastic film, and therefore, what can we do to help them to get that film into their hands? And it's something that sort of developed along the way. And the revenue that we've actually generated for ourselves, because it goes straight to our shopping cart, we cut out the middleman, we don't go through wholesale, is actually a win-win situation for both us and the filmmaker. And that's something that we're really sort of building on for every title that we're sort of acquiring down the line, because it's a no-brainer.
I mean, it's not really like selling widgets. It's each film has a right home to a certain extent, or at least you hope. And when I go to Sundance and I see a certain type of movie, on various scales, I can see a big, huge movie and I'm like, that's the right company to release that movie. When I'm bidding on something, I was like, it's probably these three companies because they're best suited for that. It's in their interest. The executives there know how to market this. And I think that goes from top to bottom. Even on a smaller level, there's the right home for a certain film. And the right people who are going to be passionate about it and get it out there. So, you know, it works on both, you know, big and small. There's huge films that sell for, you know, $30 million that you're like, okay, that film ended up at the right home because that's the right people to release that. The same thing on a film that's going to sell for no advance and it's going to be someone who's just going to give it the right type of release and hope it works.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want your film in Best Buy, let me tell you. It's a nightmare. The red jacket, sir.
To get kind of an idea of scale for each of you for a typical project, how many units, how many DVD units on average do you have to sell for an average project to be considered a success?
That's a great question, and there's no good answer, but I'll just give you a little numbers so you can chew on. An average DVD sells now for $19.99. Once in a while, we can sell something for a little bit higher. But, you know, $30, $40 DVDs, you know, they're not flying out of the door in the thousands and thousands number. So you take a $20 DVD, and most of the customers that buy them from us want 50% off. So they buy it for $10, okay? Yeah. Sometimes it's a little bit more. We have to pay for freight. So then you take $10. And then it costs $1 to manufacture a DVD, maybe $1.50. Okay.
Or maybe $3.50.
Right. Yours are
$2.99.
His aren't $19.99. Yeah. This one is. So you're talking dollars here, all right? And that's a bit of a reality check. Now, for a niche product, selling 10,000 or above is a pretty good title, wouldn't you say?
Yep, absolutely.
And it's more realistic to try for. If I could sell 1,000 units of everything that we take on, I'd be really happy. And you throw in a few 5,000 sellers and 10,000, then I'll buy a new car. But so there's a bit of a reality check there, and that's why DVD shouldn't be your only source. You know, you should be thinking about online. You should be thinking about television. You should be thinking about, well, theatricals. I wouldn't think about theatrical. Should think about different markets, Australia, Europe. Europe is a very hungry market for film still. And in some ways, it's still more of a traditional market where bookstores and smaller entities buy directly. So there's a lot of avenues.
Yeah, we're doing a little bit higher numbers than that. We're subscription-based, so we kind of have a built-in, ours is built-in, we know what we're going to sell. And then stores on top of that are gravy and nice. But what is nice about them is that we are doing deals for our first issue now in other countries around the world. It's not like it's like told it's going to go away. We're able to keep reselling those over and over. We're doing reprints and things like that. So that helps as well.
But it gets dicey. I mean, let's say we get a call from Walmart and they want to buy a DVD. Okay, they're going to ask for what, 20,000 of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, vast.
Which
numbers.
Is like you click your heels and you go buy a beer and then you need to get some antacid because they can send 19,599 back. And then, you know, then I got to, you know, take a mortgage out of my house, fire all my employees. So, you know, it's very scary. I mean, you can attest to that, I'm yeah. sure. And he plays with the big boys.
I mean, on a wide studio release, the bare minimum that you're going to hope to do on DVD is 1 million units. Based on minimum guarantee and whether you're releasing something specialty or, you know, something with a smaller art house release. I mean, we look for bare minimum a couple hundred thousand units just to take something on.
I mean, we usually, I sort of mentioned earlier how we do have a license agreement for 7 years. And what we do is we like to look at our titles and say it's an evergreen title. We are going to be doing business for that entire duration of the 7 years. So not only do we have our sort of life-to-date units that we aim for, we also have our sort of, you know, year-to-date. So each year we're sort of looking at specific titles. And it varies with documentaries. I mean, we like to think that there's no title that we're going to bring into Docurama Films that's going to do any less than 5,000 units. And we've had many titles that we've done actually over 200,000 units. And actually one title in particular, but I, you know, anyway, you can probably look at our catalog and guess which one that is. But anyway, but we really do work on it. And then also what we do is every year we look at our catalog and we look to see like what titles do we have that we can, you know, sell together, do box sets. Like, for example, we're doing a whole environmental sort of box set right now, including all our titles that deal with the environment, because we had a huge success with A Crude Awakening, Judith Helfen's film Blue Vinyl, and then suddenly there's a sort of, the bigger our catalog gets, the more that we can do things with. And then also, if a filmmaker makes a second film, another film, suddenly there's a whole press generating around the other filmmaker's new film, so then we jump on the bandwagon and start re-promoting the last film. So we're constantly looking at our back catalog and seeing what we can do with it. And also seeing in any hot topic that's in the news. It's constantly to keep our buyers' eyeballs on certain titles and for us to be a sort of ahead of the curve and realizing, you know, the year ahead, like what dates are coming down. Like I have these dates in my head that, for example, Darwin's Day, Earth Day, Autism Month, you name it. I have all these months. So I'm going, hey, September's this, month. You know, I have this, you have no idea. But just sort of realizing, you know, we have to start getting, you know, on this roller coaster 6 months down the line to allow our buyers to be aware, oh, this is coming up again. And therefore, you know, just take a look, bring in some more units. And, you know, we're constantly working that.
Yeah. Who haven't? We don't deal with control freaks, so. well, our best sellers have been ones where the artists have been the most involved. But we have a contract and we do what we do. I mean, if sometimes we get somebody who's really high maintenance, then it just, everything falls apart because there's no partnership. So I mean, you have to use basic business skills, and everybody in this room knows where those boundaries lie. The distributors who are willing to be a little bit more flexible, you should appreciate and work with them. Otherwise, you can work with someone who wants exclusive rights for 10 years and, you know, see you later. So,
and there's also an element of trust as well. I mean, you're going into this relationship with your distributor, and you've obviously made the decision yourself to go in, to go into bed with your distributor. So therefore, you've obviously done your homework. You've made a choice. You've decided, okay, this is the best way to go. And this is our business. I mean, this is what we do. This is what we do best. And there's an element where you kind of, there's give and take, but you have to allow your distributor to do what they do best, and to definitely, you know, keep them informed. And as long as there's a two-way street, then I think that's the best relationship. And certainly, you know, from my point of view, you know, I always get the filmmakers into the office. I always sit them down, meet the team, have people explain what roles they do, explain the process, and then just sort of, and then give them a timeline of when things are going to happen and what their involvement is. And I think that's really helpful, because then they get the bigger picture and they realize kind of, okay, this is what's happening. This is where I can be put to the best use, you know, for your time and for our time.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a marketing level, a filmmaker will usually have a lot of interesting ideas and stuff, but at the same time, our guys have done it a couple times. You know, I don't go to Meineke and tell them how to install a muffler. Like, we've done it. We know how to sell something. We're going to test it. We're going to make sure we're putting the most mainstream box on it. We're not fighting a filmmaker on a piece of artwork because we just disagree with them. It's because we think our version's going to sell better. So it's a give and take. I feel like there's a lot of filmmakers who have been fantastic as far as their direction in marketing. But as far as them mastering the DVD, like, I mean, I've had people ask for that, and it's like, you know, why? Like, our guys do this for a living, and you make one movie every 5 years, and I understand you have appreciation, you want yours to look the best, but I feel like my guy probably has a pretty good, knows how to master a DVD.
Can I just say one thing? Also, with regard to any posters that are getting made, sometimes they don't translate from a poster to a DVD box. Sometimes it just doesn't work. So I'm just throwing that out there because that's been a challenge.
Yeah, theatrical art and DVD art, I think, are very different. For a while, we were a studio that was faces on a box, whereas we may have one campaign for a theatrical release that usually has TV and radio and support to correlate an image that may not have, you know, the cast or something on it, to a DVD box where you're trying to catch someone's eye in a sea of other DVDs. So you're trying to, you know, have certain triggers that people may say, I like that actor. It's a different sell.
Getting back to the question real quick, though, for our part, we never have any problems with the filmmakers. As you're sitting out here listening to all this, and there's all these different options and all these different things, you're like, oh my God, I need a sales agent. I need someone to handle all of this for me. That's the only time we ever have any problems, because dealing with sales agents is difficult.
If somebody thinking, says, just call my manager, I'm like,
yeah, okay.
So,
yeah. Filmmakers, by and large, want their film seen by people. You know, and if we were offering that to them, that's really
true. We've got the Atheist film that I talked about earlier. I mean, he's incredibly active, and I'm just blown away by the network he's developed. And we have other artistic type films where people have, they send us, hey, did you go check out this store in, you know, Barcelona? They want our DVD. Cool. All right, I'll sell it. And that really works well. And it's their baby. You know, we know how important and how much time has gone into the making of the film. And that's why we do what we do. Yes.
I mean, I would say do both. I mean, you have to. It's nice. The nice thing about, you know, all of this is that you can make a short version, make it, turn it into, serialize it and sell it as a TV show. Make a 5-minute version, put it on YouTube and get a bunch of people interested to buy the 90-minute DVD you cut and the 30-minute short. Like, that is where, you know, the meshing between online and DVD and everything is going, is that you have a lot of different ways to sell the same material over again in different mm-hmm. in different ways. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to be able to show someone, you know, a completed product. Like, this is what an hour version of this film would be, and would you buy this? Or this would be, you know, a 30-minute version for dollars.
But do some research. I mean, you can go to the store and see who's distributing what types of film. We do it all the time. And we actually acquire a lot of films by, you know, going to European stores and say, oh, we want that one. Call them and sure. So it's a combination of your own research. But you also brought up an interesting point that we're really interested in is, take an artist, for example, who has a DVD, like Andy Goldsworthy, something that Docurama put out that we actually sold a lot of as well to our market. Well, people are so into Andy Goldsworthy, they would be really interested to see some footage that's not on that DVD online. Okay, so we're developing an online component for our DVD distribution business where we're going to show hours, you know, let's say of William Wegman videos that we'll never publish on DVD. So think about that. You know, there's all these new and exciting different avenues. Because, you know, iTunes is cool, but iTunes is way behind the curve already. You know, it took them 2 years to return our phone calls. Thank you. They're finally involved aggregating independent film, but for a couple of years they weren't. So is there any internet people who can start thinking about a competitive thing to iTunes? Mm-hmm. Let's go. There's going to be a lot, right? There's going to be a lot more availability and things for you to market. So it's not just about a 22-minute piece or an hour-long piece or a DVD length. Or
yeah, I absolutely agree. I'm working with John Reese right now on his film Bomit, and he did was it Living Through Circuitry, this whole documentary on DJs, and John's like totally tapped into this whole sort of underground graffiti world. And so what he's doing is he's actually doing a series of webisodes where just sort of leading up to the release of the DVD. So he's actually going to tap into various groups of, like, for example, the people who are like into tattoos. Like, we have our press and PR marketing group are sort of going to sort of hit up a lot of the sort of tattoo magazines and all that kind of stuff, and he's going to do a webisode about people who do graffiti that end up, their graffiti ends up as tattoos and all this kind of stuff. So he's really been strategic about thinking about releasing these webisodes as the DVD's coming out, and that's something that we'd been talking to him for a long time about, and trying to kind of really think about what clips we can use to get out virally to help promote the film. And these clips are going to be maybe 3 minutes long. And we're just going to stagger that and just see what happens to just get people's awareness of this bigger film that's going to be hitting streets and stores DVD.
Mm-hmm. We have time for probably one more question. So it has to be the question. You. We'll get it.
We work with the filmmaker and help make that happen. And again, anything that we work with, I mean, we would look for something to make a DVD collectible. So again, we want to have a sort of the consumer have an experience while they're watching the film. So for example, we'll add on, you know, we'll really bolster it as best we can with bonus features and all that kind of stuff. And we do help the filmmaker along the way by putting that together if they need the help. Because sometimes filmmakers have been very savvy and they've already, you know, got their clips and all the rest of it put together with the anticipating that this is what they'll be used for.
Do you have a gun? Yeah, go ahead. That's the question. Thank you.
Yeah. That's your last question.
Yeah.
That's the one you
were. I'll start. We see the future as an exciting one. Again, I think somebody said already, I think you said it, it's not either or. Mm-hmm. DVDs are an incredible phenomenon in in marketing. So they, I don't think they're going to go away, at least in the next 10 years. I think you're going to see a transition. And the good filmmakers and the good distribution companies and the studios are going to be the ones who are going to actually help that transition happen instead of hinder it. And I think that's what you have to look out for. Any roadblocks you want to get around. But, you know, I don't know what it's going to look like 15 years from now.
Very blue.
No. Blue. I mean, it, for each person, it's different. I mean, I like to buy a hard copy of a DVD. I like to hold it in my hand. I like to go to the store and do it. I can't operate a computer. So it, for me, that's the format that is going to work for me. And I don't think DVD is going anywhere. I think it's going to be here. It's going to, there's going to be multiple formats. I mean, as a studio, we're always looking for different revenue streams, as is everyone, you know, different ways to exploit and get your product to the masses. So I think for us, it's just a matter of we're going to do what's best. And as new technologies arise, we're going to utilize them. I mean, for me, I'm never going to watch something on an iPhone. It's just not how I like to watch something. There are people where that's probably their chosen format, and they're going to sit there and they're going to watch everything on iPhones. So there's a lot of different ways to market stuff, and I don't think the technology is there yet for all the different opportunities there's going to be to exploit it, but there's going to be a variety of ways to see something. I don't think theatrical exhibition's going anywhere. I don't think hard copies of DVDs are going anywhere, and I think the computer is going to be a real place to actually get stuff and download and stuff along those lines.
I agree.
Totally, dude. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's not going anywhere. People want the physical object. We find this, we're a perfect example. They want to hold something, and especially if you've got, you know, interviews and commentary with the directors, all of this ancillary types of. You cannot get, you could download a PDF of liner notes of a 40-page booklet, but it's less satisfying for some people to read. We, you know, I mean, we have 40-page booklets with each of our issues that you can't download that off the internet. You can watch the films themselves, but you can't get the interview with the director with the diagram that he hand scrawled about the specific shot or whatever.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that it's the whole sort of digital business is definitely going to increase, and that's a component of our company objective that we've been thinking about and we're planning for the next 5 years, and it's something that's going to increase. And so it's going to be this sort of little sort of, you know, you're going to be seeing this, but I quite honestly, I, you know, DVD is going to be here for a while, but we're being, you know, very careful and thoughtful about what's sort of happening over the next 5 years for us, certainly.
I mean, there's the term thrown around, early adapters, with a lot of different formats, and I think it's just which formats stay. It's not necessarily always going to be the most efficient or best format. It's going to be what people choose to use. And
we're
doing both right now. I mean, New Video is one of the top three aggregators for iTunes, and along with many other digital companies, so we're doing it right now.
So we got, yeah, go ahead, one more.
I mean, certainly for us, we always look at films that have, as we call, like a pedigree. And certainly, you know, the theatrical does help, because, but it's really the amount of press that's generated around the film that we can use. But with documentaries, really, and also the amount of markets that's played in, the amount of cities that the documentaries played in. And but with regard to a TV broadcast, that's always helpful. And usually the best scenario that we like is to go date and date with the release of the DVD and the TV broadcast.
Well, and I think documentary is very much a rental format. There's occasionally a doc that people may want to buy because they, you know, when you buy something, it's because you usually want to watch it over and over again. Something like Air Guitar Nation, or a documentary called like What the Bleep. Like, people bought this because they wanted to watch it over and over and over again. So documentaries typically are the type of thing where theatrical, if you've seen it, you've seen it. It's not like if someone goes and watches Transformers, they're going to go and buy Transformers because they're going to watch it over and over again. Publicity-wise, you can get fantastic publicity, and just the interest is not there. A lot of people There's so many channels. There's so many things on TV right now that very often stuff is better done on the History Channel or Discovery Channel than it would be on a theatrical DVD. So it's just a matter of finding the right campaign. The fact that a documentary ever works theatrically now, I think, is kind of lightning in a bottle, because I see a lot of great docs that don't work, and I see some ones that aren't that good that do work. So I think it's kind of a mixed marketplace for documentary right now.
Sorry, what was the last bit? I didn't hear that. Sorry. Ideally, it would be theatrical, TV broadcast, and DVD. Oh, absolutely. Because we would do like a tag, like an on-air tag, you know, visit whatever website for sure. Absolutely.
Yep.
And re-airing as well helps.
Yeah, if something's on NBC, though, okay. No one's buying it.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks to our panelists, Liz, Britt, and Scott. Thanks for the good questions.
Thank you, guys.
I think we'll be hanging out up here if you want to ask some questions or get some contacts. Thanks.